Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Today, let us remember together the death of an innocent girl, little Mary Fagan, who met her death more than a century ago this week. Her rapist, her convicted murderer, was her sweatshop boss, Leo Frank, a mid-level member of the Jewish establishment. Ever since the day of his arrest, that same Jewish establishment, working first at a local, then at a national, and then an international level, worked to get her killer off the hook. There are parallels between sex exploiter Leo Frank and the Jews who sexually exploit white girls today and use their ill-gotten billions to escape justice when caught. On this program, we hear our own Vanessa Neubauer presenting an important article on these parallels for the first time in audio form. Listen.
This week marks the 108th anniversary of the sex murder of a 13-year-old white girl, Mary Fagan, by Jewish B'nai B'rith official Leo Max Frank, on April 26, 1913. To honor Mary Fagan's life and to ensure that the real identity of her killer is never forgotten, despite the massive Jewish campaign to paint him as a victim of anti-Semitism, we present a new audio version of N. Joseph Potts' article originally published by the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust and reprinted by the Leo Frank Case Research Library, entitled Jewish Men Dying in Jail for Ravaging Young Girls, Epstein and Frank. The text was edited and adapted for radio by Kevin Alfred Strom and read by yours truly, Vanessa Neubauer. Jewish Men Dying in Jail for Ravaging Young Girls, Epstein and Frank. The death in jail of Jeffrey Epstein more than a year ago recalls a very famous death of another jailed Jewish man charged, and convicted and sentenced, of crimes against a 13-year-old girl in 1913. That case, which involved only one of many rumored similar victims, involved the lethal abuse of a factory worker named Mary Fagan by the manager of the factory, 29-year-old pillar of the Atlanta Jewish community, Leo Frank, who, having grown up in Brooklyn, might have seemed rather a damn Yankee to at least some of his neighbors of 106 years ago. Frank's victim, unlike any of Epstein's known victims, was murdered in addition to being raped. And while Frank was tried and convicted and sentenced to death, his guilt continues to be vigorously contested more than a century later by the successors to the massive and distinctly Jewish campaign to win his exoneration during and after his trial. Uncounted millions have been, and are still, being spent to convince you that Leo Frank didn't do what he did. The two cases, while they have many and important differences, both involve Jewish men accused of raping underage white girls, as well as large and enduring campaigns of national stature to secure the acquittal of the defendants. In Frank's 1913 case, America's, then smaller but already powerful, Jewish power structure, which even then included large advertising agencies, public relations firms, and newspapers large and small, including the New York Times, mobilized to support his exoneration, stimulated by the notion, perhaps manufactured among the larger and more influential Jews of the northern United States, that Frank was being discriminated against because he was a Jew in the South, whose Jewish population was then less influential than that of their co-religionists to the North. Frank was, in any case, a child of the North, having grown up in Brooklyn. The establishment of the Anti-Defamation League in September 1913 is widely credited to Jewish outrage at Frank's arrest and conviction for the sex killing of Mary Fagan earlier that year. Epstein's case entailed a much-reduced conviction and a much-diluted prison sentence, along with an outrageous non-prosecution agreement, in what now might be called its first phase, one that might reflect his vastly greater influence over the judicial apparatus, and no doubt because no one had been found murdered. Frank's case had only one phase, including appeals that went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, but of course did involve a murder, the evidence for which satisfied all the jurors on the case, but has never satisfied the jury of public opinion as mediated by the largely Jewish-run mass media. Jewish moguls of Frank's day, such as Albert Lasker, saw to it, through vigorous fundraising campaigns conducted throughout Jewish communities in the North, that his defense was indeed the best that money could buy. Epstein had no need for any such circling of the financial wagons. He was a billionaire in his own right. Jewish legal luminaries such as Alan Dershowitz, who has also been named in lawsuits as one of the men allegedly receiving sexual services from Epstein's stable of teenage sex slaves, figured large in the phalanx ultimately mustered to defend him in the Florida case that led to the non-prosecution deal and his sentence to 13 months part-time confinement in a minimum security prison near his palatial estate in Palm Beach, which he was allowed to leave for many hours every day. Among those ensnared in Epstein's fiendishly woven net was the United States Attorney for Southern Florida, Alexander Acosta, who arranged for Epstein's sweetheart deal and convenient conviction on a lesser Florida state charge. Later appointed as Secretary of Labor by President Donald Trump, he subsequently resigned under fire after Epstein was again arrested in July 2019 by the United States Attorney for Southern New York, the locus of yet more of the crimes with which Epstein was charged, all of them involving underage teenage girls. Epstein's guilt is not contested, neither as to the ages of his victims, nor even really as to their numbers, apparently something north of dozens. Neither Epstein nor any of his co-conspirators is implicated in any murder, though, unlike Leo Frank. Frank's guilt, at least of the murder of Mary Fagan, continues to be very much contested by, among others, the ubiquitous Alan Dershowitz. Yes, the very same Harvard Law School professor who has for many years now led the star-studded legal team defending Jeffrey Epstein, the 21st century's answer to Leo Frank. Naturally, the metaphorical child of the Frank case, the Anti-Defamation League, continues to beat its very loud drum to advance the cause of Leo Frank's innocence, even to the point, in 1986, of securing a kind of posthumous pardon from the state of Georgia, though rather a weak one, basically an apology for having failed to protect its notorious inmate from lynching in 1915. Frank's lynching, after spending more than 2 years in prison, was the first, and last, lynching of a Jew recorded in the annals of American history. American Jewry had, over those 2 years, made the Frank case a cause célèbre, not least in the media, which, even at that early time, were controlled by Jewish interests not only through ownership, such as Adolf Ochs' New York Times, but through the massive and pervasive influence of large-scale advertisers such as merchandiser Albert Lasker, whose tentacles reached into the hearts of virtually every newspaper, large and small, in the United States. Lasker, having taken the cause very much to heart, became the unofficial leader of the campaign in Frank's behalf, a campaign that may be said to have continued vigorously today, well into its second century. The Epstein case, unlike the Frank case, did not become a Jewish issue despite the Jewishness of Epstein. Epstein's patron, Les Wexner, Dershowitz, and many of Epstein's other defenders. Indeed, Epstein did not, as Frank did with some distinction, take part in Jewish religious affairs beyond hobnobbing with ex-prime ministers of Israel and the like. But the ethnic commonality among Epstein and other Jewish men such as Harvey Weinstein and Leon Wieseltier was the subject of a recent article by maverick Jew Gilad Atzmon, volubly countering this non-ethnic quality of Lafera Epstein. However, the non-ethnicity of the matter has seemingly left the ADL out of this reprise of the case that brought it into existence. Leo Frank was not as rich as Jeffrey Epstein was, although his wife did come from a wealthy family. So he could not, as Epstein easily did, fund his own high-powered team of defense lawyers. But Frank did indeed enjoy a powerful defense team easily comparable to the one marshaled around Epstein. It was funded by Albert Lasker and a nationwide fundraising campaign conducted largely through Jewish auspices, such as synagogues and chapters of the B'nai B'rith, of whose Atlanta chapter Frank was president. Indeed, Frank's team's successors have managed within the past year to establish Georgia's first Conviction Integrity Unit, which has taken on the task of revising certain verdicts, such as that of convicted murderer Wayne Williams as a kind of cover to prevent the truth, that its real purpose is to get Frank exonerated from coming out. Unlike also-pardoned ADL benefactor Mark Rich, Leo Frank's supporters haven't made large donations to foundations of American presidents, but smaller donations to the foundations and political campaign funds of Georgia and Fulton County politicians may produce the desired effects quite handily. No relatives of Leo Frank are to be found among the public advocates of this campaign, nor any descendant of anyone who knew him. Relatives of Mary Fagan, however, oppose the initiative, and were not consulted in any way about it. It is widely assumed that Epstein was murdered in jail a la Lee Harvey Oswald, to keep him from dishing the dirt on many powerful people. Frank's death at the hands of lynchers who extracted him from jail in August 1915 is claimed to have been motivated by anti-Semitism, as continually asserted this past century or so by the ADL, other Frank supporters, and their latter-day successors such as Alan Dershowitz. But that idea also is contested by many researchers, including those as diverse as National Vanguard and the Historical Research Department of the Nation of Islam, publisher and author of Record of the Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 3, The Leo Frank Case. This work, long since banned by Amazon.com, speculates, pages 309 to 330, that the lynch mob might have been encouraged or covertly orchestrated by the same Jewish parties who had supported and defended Frank's innocence in the 2 years preceding the lynching. Why would these same partisans now wish their beneficiary dead? Because he might confess, of course. He was alive in keeping with their wishes, but still incarcerated, very much against their wishes. And while in prison he might be subject, a la Rudolf Huss of Holocaust fame, to coercion or even inducements, to confess to the crimes of which he was accused, and perhaps also there were numerous Jewish connections to the illicit sex scene and the trafficking of young girls, then called white slavery. Connections that they much preferred to remain hidden, but that Frank might decide to talk about. This would certainly never do. In fact, Frank nearly died in his cell, as Epstein did in his, after a fellow inmate cut his jugular vein with a butcher knife, about 1 month after his death sentence was commuted to life imprisonment. Perhaps the would-be murderer was committing a din rodef murder. In the Talmud, the killing of someone who is about to inform on a Jew or group of Jews is required, on behalf of Jewish paymasters, not unlike those said to have commissioned Jeffrey Epstein's death. 2 months elapsed between Governor Slayton's commutation of Frank's sentence and the lynch mob's carefully arranged transits by car of around 150 miles over unpaved roads from Marietta to Milledgeville, where they picked up their hapless victim, and then back again to Marietta, chosen because it was the hometown of poor Mary Fagan. None of the participants in the lynching, most well-known and some highly placed, was even charged with the murder of Frank, much less prosecuted. One wonders if, 100 or so years from now, the ADL will secure the exoneration of Jeffrey Epstein. Yeah, those girls were all party-crashing gold diggers. Epstein just got the rap because he was Jewish. That's right. Just because he was a Jew. So, this week, the 108th anniversary of Mary Fagan's murder, let us remember her, honor her, and never forget the inveterate, malicious liars who are always and ever devoted to protecting Jewish killers and Jewish rapists, and even elevating them to the status of victim of anti-Semitism, and thereby enabling the Harvey Weinsteins, the Woody Allens, the Allen Ginsbergs, the Leo Franks, and the Jeffrey Epsteins of this world.